Chapter 38. Aristides was nothing more than a streak in the air as he closed on Daniel, slamming into him, knocking him back. As Daniel fell, that wicked knife gleamed and whipsawed back and forth half a dozen times in the space of a second, striking Daniel in the chest and belly on every blow. Anyone other than Michael and Charity Carpenter's son would have been gutted like a fish. The kid had gotten some serious training, maybe from Murphy, maybe from the Einherjaren, maybe from his father, probably from all of them. I'm not a professional when it comes to hand-to-hand combat, of the supernatural variety or otherwise, but I know enough to know how little I know. And one of the things I know is that you don't just decide to time your moves a second in advance to compensate for a lack of supernatural speed. You have to learn that stuff, to build it into your reflexes with weeks or months of painstaking practice. Daniel had. He started rolling with the slashes of the knife before Aristides had fully closed the distance, even as he stumbled backward from the force of the sorcerer's initial impact. The knife bit into his chest and belly and found armor waiting for it. Beneath his winter coat, Daniel was wearing a garment I recognized as Charity's handiwork. A double-thick Kevlar vest with a coat of thick titanium rings sandwiched in between the layers of ballistic cloth. Kevlar could stop bullets, but it didn't do squat for blades. That was what the titanium mail was for. Sparks flew up in rapid succession as the knife struck armor. The impact sounded like someone hitting a side of beef with a baseball bat. But Daniel's body was in motion, giving in with each of the blows, robbing them of the most savage portion of their power. The knife never touched his skin. Aristides came to a stop after that blinding fast combination of attacks and crouched, his arm to one side, parallel to the ground, the knife gripped hard in it. He looked like an extra in a martial arts movie, the goober. Daniel turned his backward momentum into a roll and came up on his feet. It didn't look very graceful, but he was obviously in control of the motion, and he dropped into a fighting crouch about 20 feet from the sorcerer. One hand went into his hip pocket and came out with a simple folding lock knife with a black plastic handle. With his thumb, he snapped out a blade maybe 4 inches long and held the weapon tucked in close to his body, point toward Aristides. He jerked the cloak off his back and with a few flicks of his arm, wrapped the heavy material around his left forearm. Then he held his left hand a little in front of him, palm down, fingers loose, ready to block or grab. Aristides had a good poker face, but for the moment, I didn't have anything to do except watch what was going on, and I knew his type. The sorcerer hadn't been psychologically prepared for Daniel's reaction. The stupid bruiser was supposed to be bleeding on the floor, maybe begging for his life. At the very least, he should have been running, terrified, but instead, the very large young man had apparently shrugged off the deadly attacks and meant to fight. "Nice knife," Daniel said. Scorn dripped from the words. "Get it out of a magazine?" "From the last fool who tried a blade against me." Daniel bared his teeth. "Come here, I'll give you this one." Aristides flicked his knife through a little series of spins, making it dance nimbly through his fingers. It was a stupid thing to do in a real situation, but the guy clearly knew how to use the weapon. Then his body tightened as he hissed a word, and once more he flashed toward Daniel. The body language before the spell that granted him speed had given him away. The kid was ready again. He sidestepped and swept his arms in a pair of half circles as Aristides flashed by. There was the sound of shearing cloth, and then the sorcerer was past him. Daniel turned to face Aristides with a hiss of pain. His left arm, wrapped in the gray cloak, was bleeding, red spreading through the gray in a slow but growing stain. "No armor there," Aristides murmured with a smile. Daniel said nothing. He just took position again, holding his bloodied knife level, its point toward the sorcerer. Aristides looked down and saw the long, shallow cut across his right pectoral. A fine sheet of blood had mixed with a sweat that had broken out on his skin. Heads were popping out of the debris and refuse now. Zero and his compatriots, maybe a dozen kids all told, were emerging from their hiding spots to watch the fight. From the looks on their faces, it was the first time they'd ever seen their fearless leader get hurt. Hell, if they'd been anything like me when I was young, they probably had believed that he couldn't be hurt. Daniel Carpenter had just shown them differently, and the sorcerer knew it. Aristides' face set into a grimace of undiluted hate as he stared at Daniel. Then he did something unexpected. He simply walked forward and pounced into knife range. The exchange was brief, most knife fights are. Daniel, the taller of the two, had the advantage of reach, somewhat negated by the length of the sorcerer's blade. He wore armor over his torso and was stronger, but Aristides was the faster of the two, even without magic, and he had a lot more experience. Hands and knives flashed, all whip-crack speed and whispering violence as they parted the air. I couldn't keep track of the individual cuts. There were just too many of them. I saw Daniel's mail shirt turn aside another pair of strikes, one of them hard enough to send a titanium ring tinkling across the floor. A flicker of red fanned through the air where one of the fighters lost a splash of blood. Daniel let out a short grunt, then another. Aristides barked out a sound of both pain and satisfaction. The two parted, both breathing heavily. Combat taxes a body's reserves like nothing else on earth. Seconds of it can leave you exhausted, even if you're in great shape. Daniel staggered and went down to one knee, letting out a grunt of surprise. There were wounds on both of his legs, punctures, deep stabs. Neither wound had hit one of the big arteries or he'd already be unconscious, but they were right through the quadriceps muscles and had to have been agonizing. He snarled and attempted to rise. Halfway there, he faltered and went down again. Training, courage, and fortitude get you only so far. A deep enough wound on either leg could have taken Daniel out of the fight. He had them on both. Aristides hadn't come away clean from the exchange, though. There was a deep cut on his right arm where Daniel's knife had caught him hard. Flesh hung from a flap of skin. Blood flowed, but his arm still seemed to work. If Aristides lived long enough, and if he kept the arm, he was going to have one hell of a scar to show off later. But that wasn't going to matter much to Daniel. The sorcerer switched his knife to his left hand and stared at Daniel with flat eyes. Kids like you haven't learned the price of doing business. When to trade pain for victory. He blurred into motion again, and Daniel lifted his knife. Then the younger man cried out and fell to his side, clutching at his right arm with his left hand. His knife landed on the floor and spun away from him, eventually coming to rest against Aristides' feet. The sorcerer took his time transferring his own knife to his left hand and picking up Daniel's. He tested the blade's balance and edge and said, "Serviceable." He carefully wiped the blood from Daniel's blade against the leg of his trousers, closed it, and slipped it into the pocket of his bathrobe. Then he fixed the young man with a nasty smile, raised his own blade over his head so that Daniel's blood dripped down it and fell on his upraised arm, and he started to chant. I felt the magic gathering at once. It wasn't particularly powerful, but that was by my own standards. Magic doesn't absolutely require a ton of horsepower to be dangerous. It took Aristides maybe 10 seconds to summon enough will and focus for whatever he was doing, and I stood there clenching my fists and my jaw in impotent fury. Daniel saw what was happening and found an old can in the detritus on the floor beside him. He threw it at Aristides in an awkward left-handed motion, but came nowhere close to striking the sorcerer. Aristides pointed the knife at Daniel, his eyes reptilian, hissed a word and released the spell. Michael's eldest son arched his back and let out a strangled scream of agony. Aristides repeated the word, and Daniel contorted in pain again, his back bowing more than I would have thought possible. I stifled a furious scream of my own and looked away as the sorcerer bent and twisted the energy of creation itself into a means of torment. Looking away was almost worse. Aristides' young followers were watching with a sick fascination. Daniel screamed until he was out of breath and then began to strangle himself as he tried to keep it up. One of the kids bent suddenly and began retching onto the floor. "This is my house," Aristides said, his expression never changing. "I am the master here, and my will is..." Butters appeared behind Aristides from around an upended vat of some kind and swung 3 feet of lead pipe into the side of the sorcerer's knee. There was a sharp, clear crack as bone and cartilage snapped, and Aristides screamed and went down. "That sound you just heard," Butters said, his voice tight with fear and adrenaline, "was your lateral collateral ligament and anterior cruciate ligament tearing free of the joint. It's also possible that your patella or tibia was fractured." Aristides just laid there in pain, gasping through clenched teeth. A line of spittle drooled out of his mouth. Butters hefted the lead pipe like a batter at the plate. "Get rid of the knife, or I start on your cranium." Aristides kept on gasping, but didn't look up. He tossed the creepy knife away. "The one in your pocket, too," Butters said. The sorcerer gave him a look of pure hatred. Then he tossed away the knife he'd appropriated from Daniel. "Sit tight, Daniel," Butters called. "I'll be with you in just a second."
"I'm fine," Daniel groaned from the ground.
He didn't sound fine, but as I watched, I saw him winding pieces of the slashed cloak around the wound in his right arm, binding them closed and slowing the bleeding. Tough kid, and thinking under pressure. Butters focused on Aristides.
"I don't want to hurt you," he said. "I want to help you. Your knee has been destroyed. You will never walk again if you don't get medical attention. I'll take you to a hospital."
"What do you want?" Aristides growled.
"The priest? Fitz? These kids?" He bounced the lead pipe against his own shoulder a couple of times. "And this really isn't a negotiation."
"Yes," I said, clenching my fist. "You go, Butters."
Aristides eyed Butters for a moment more. Then he sagged and let out a soft groan of pain. "Oh, crap."
"You win," the sorcerer said. "Just, please, help me."
"Straighten it out," Butters said, never quite looking at the man. "Lie back and leave it straight." Aristides fumbled with his leg and let out another higher-pitched moan of pain. Butters flinched at the sound, and his eyes were tortured. In a sudden flash of insight, I realized why he cut up corpses for a living instead of treating live patients. Butters couldn't handle seeing people in pain. That was what he'd always meant when he said that he wasn't a real doctor, when he said that treating living patients was messy and disturbing compared to extracting individual organs and cataloging them in autopsies. Dead people were just a pile of meat and bones. They were beyond all suffering. A physician needs a certain level of professional detachment if he is going to best serve his patients, and Butters just didn't have it. The little guy couldn't bring himself not to feel something for the people he worked with. So he had sought a career where he practiced medicine without trying to heal anyone, without involving himself with actual patients. Aristides had seen it too. He probably didn't understand it, but he saw the soft spot, and he went for it ruthlessly.
"Don't," I breathed. "Butters, don't."
"Damn it," Butters said finally, gritting his teeth. He bent to help the man.
"Hold still, you're just making it worse. Here."
He tried to keep a wary distance as he lent the man a hand, but it just wasn't possible to help him and stay out of reach. I saw it on his face as he realized it and began to withdraw. Then, as the man continued his low moans of pain, Butters gave his head a little shake and moved to help Aristides straighten his leg. I saw the sorcerer's eyes narrow to slits, an almost sensual pleasure contained in them. "Damn it," I said. "Butters, move!" I vanished and appeared beside Butters, shoving my hands into his chest, willing myself to push him away. I didn't move him. My hands just passed into him, insubstantial. But a sudden frisson seemed to run through him, and he began to pull away. Too late. Aristides' left arm blurred and struck Butters squarely on the chin. If he hadn't been drawing back, the blow would have caught him just under the ear, and the sorcerer's hand was moving fast enough that it might have broken Butters' neck. Even so, the sharp thump of impact snapped Butters' head to one side, hard enough to rebound when it had reached maximum torsion. He did a brief bobblehead impersonation on the way to the floor and landed in a boneless heap. I wanted to scream in frustration. Instead, I poked at my brain, demanding it to come up with something. To my considerable surprise, it did. I vanished straight up to the ceiling and spun in a quick circle. There, I spotted Fitz moving in a low crawl toward one of the exits from the factory floor, keeping a modest pile of junk between himself and Aristides. "Fitz!" I bellowed. I vanished and reappeared right over him. "Fitz, you've got to turn around." "Quiet!" he hissed in a frantic whisper. His eyes were white around the edges. "Quiet! No, I can't! Leave me alone." "You've got to do it," I said. "Fort Hill's here in the camp, hurt bad. There's a freaking angel of death standing over him. He needs help." Fitz didn't answer me. He kept on crawling off the factory floor and into one of the hallways outside it. He was making desperate small sounds as he reached the door and got out of any possible line of sight to Aristides. "Fitz," I said. "Fitz, you have got to do something. You're the only one who can." "Cops," he panted. "I'll call the cops. They can handle it." He got up and started padding down the hall toward what I presumed was the nearest exit from the building. "Butters and Daniel don't have that kind of time," I answered. "The cops get tipped off by a runaway, we'll be lucky if a prowl car cruises by half an hour from now. All three of them could be dead by then. Your boss can't allow witnesses." "You're the wizard," Fitz said. "Why can't you do it? I mean, ghosts can possess people and stuff, right? Just zap into Aristides and make him jump off the roof." I was quiet for a moment. Then I said, "Look, I'm new at this ghost thing, but it doesn't work like that. Even the badass ghost of a centuries-old wizard I know of can only possess a subject who is willing. So far, I have only been able to move into people who were sensitive to spirits, and they could have booted me out any time they wanted. Aristides is neither sensitive nor willing. I'd be like a bug splattering on a windshield if I tried to take him over."
"Christ!"
"If you want to volunteer, I could take you over, I suppose. I don't think you've got the right wiring for me to use my power, and you'd still be in danger, of course. But you wouldn't have to make the decisions." Fitz shuddered.
"No."
"Good. It's weird as hell." I paused and took a breath. "And besides, it would be wrong." "Wrong?" Fitz asked. "Take away someone's will, you take away everything they are, their whole identity. Doing that to someone is worse than murder. If you kill them, they don't keep on suffering."
"Who cares?" Fitz said. "This guy's an animal. Who cares if he gets something bad? He's earned it."
"Wrong is wrong, even when you really, really want it not to be," I said quietly. "I learned that one the hard way. It's easy to do the right thing when it doesn't cost you. Not as easy to do the right thing when your back is to the wall." Fitz shook his head the whole time I spoke that last, and his pace quickened.
"There's nothing I can do. I'm running for my life."
I fought down a snarl to keep my voice level. Time to change tactics. "Kid, you aren't thinking it through," I said. "You know Aristides. You know him.
Which part of running for my life didn't come across?
I grunted. The part where you leave your friends to die.
What?
He's busted up pretty bad right now. Weak. How long do you think it will take him to replace all your crew?
Fitz's steps dragged to a stop.
They've seen him weak now. Hell, he's hurt bad enough that he might be crippled for life. What do you think he'll do with the kids who saw him beaten? Who saw him get bloodied and smashed to the floor?
Fitz bowed his head. Stars and stones, kid. You started showing signs of independent thought, and he was so threatened by it that he set you up to get killed. What do you think he'll do to Zero?
Fitz didn't answer.
You run now, I said quietly, and you're going to spend your whole life running.
This is a crossroads. This is where your life takes form. Here, now, this moment.
His face twisted up as if he was in physical pain. Still, he didn't respond.
I wanted to put my hand on his shoulder to give him the reassurance of a human touch. The best I could do was to soften my voice as much as I could.
I know what I'm talking about, kid. Every time you're alone in the dark, every time you go by a mirror, you're going to remember this moment. You're going to see who you've become, and you'll either be the man who ran away while his own crew and three good men died, or you'll be the man who stood tall and did something about it.
Fitz swallowed and whispered,
"He's too strong."
"Not right now, he isn't," I said. "He's on the ground. He can't walk. He's got one arm. If I didn't think you had a chance, I'd be telling you to run."
"I can't," he whispered. "I can't. This isn't fair."
"Life hardly ever is," I said.
"I don't want to die."
"No one does. But everyone does it anyway."
"That's supposed to be funny?"
"Maybe a little ironic, given the source. Look, kid, all that matters is the answer to the question. Which of those men do you want to be?"
Slowly he lifted his head.
I realized that he could see his own reflection in the glass of an office door. I stood behind him, looking down at him, and remembering with a faint sense of irrational disbelief that I had once been no taller than the boy.
"Which man, Fitz?"
I asked quietly.